Remember 2008? The year that Flo Rida had the number one song in the U.S. Also the year that Javier Bardem took home Best Supporting Actor at the Oscars for his role in No Country for Old Men.
Thank you to the Coens for being crazy enough to think that I could do that and put one of the most horrible haircuts on history over my head.
Yeah, that haircut was pretty darn bad.
Hello, Chicago!
Of course, it was also the year that Barack Obama won his first term in the White House.
Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
And it was the year that the housing market went. Something that Politico's Katie O'Donnell remembers pretty well.
So in 2007, housing really started to melt down, but obviously it's 2008 when everything kind of fell apart.
Traders here working the phone say a lot of their customers are freaked out, waiting to see how low the Dow will go.
And a big part of this was, you know, there was an oversupply of housing, and you had situations like, I don't know if you're familiar with The Big Short.
Yeah.
But the kind of classic example is like the stripper who's bought three, you know, condos or whatever.
Five houses. And a condo.
Anyways, back to Katie.
So basically, there were too many houses for kind of a normal market, which meant that houses were being sold to people who didn't have the means to afford these houses.
Hence the five houses and a condo.
There was a lot of buying and selling of housing that had nothing to do with living in a home.
And eventually, that led to a housing crisis.
If you are watching us from the last home you'll ever own tonight, consider yourself lucky. Same goes for anyone ready to buy a slice of the American dream. But if you're among the millions trying to sell, this was a very bad day. And all my
friends are tired. Now it's 2021. Flo Rida's no longer at the top of the charts. Olivia Rodrigo is. And the housing situation is looking pretty different. There's far fewer homes available. And when it comes to prices,
home prices in January increased 14% over the previous year.
Yeah, you heard that right. 14%, even though we're in the middle of a pandemic, which is a problem.
You have a situation where there are a ton of millennials aging into their peak home buying years. And if the market outpaces them, if home prices continue to rise at three times the rate of income growth, it's a situation where the supply of housing and demand for housing are so imbalanced that it makes policymakers concerned.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today, Katie O'Donnell on how more than a decade after the 2008 crash, we're on the verge of a different kind of housing crisis. So, Katie, you're reporting that right now, even though we're in the middle of a pandemic that's wrecked parts of the economy, the housing market is booming. How the hell is that possible?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a big part of that is the fact that this crisis is so uneven, right? You've seen, you know, white-collar workers who can work from home easily have actually done quite well during this. A lot of them have added to their savings, whether it's from not going out or the fact that the stock market is doing so well, they're benefiting from higher stock prices. And there was, you know, as a result of the crisis, the Fed put in place this easy money policy.
Good afternoon. Today, my colleagues on the FOMC and I kept interest rates near zero and maintained our sizable asset purchases. These measures, along with our strong guidance on interest rates and our balance sheet, will ensure that monetary policy will continue to deliver powerful support to the economy until the recovery is complete.
That, in turn, led to historically low mortgage rates. Mortgage rates fell to 3%, which was just unheard of. And people who had the means were able to rush into the market.
Many parts of the economy slumped last year, but Roanoke Valley's housing market actually boomed.
More than 6,000 houses were sold, which is a new record. Housing prices are breaking records as well, with an average that is $30,000 more than 2019.
There's another element of this, too, that's already going into the pandemic. You have this glut of millennials. It's the largest generational cohort in the country. It's like 72 to 75 million people. Mm-hmm. They're all aging into peak home buying years. And so when the pandemic struck, there was a kind of a combination of factors that may have pushed some of the demand forward. You already have demographic demand because so many millennials are getting to that age. Then you have a situation where people who might have moved to the suburbs or, you know, moved into a single family home a little farther from the city over like a 3-year period were sort of nudged off the fence because crowded urban housing became kind of, nobody wanted that during this pandemic, right? There were social distancing rules. Nobody wanted to be in, you know, a big apartment building interacting with strangers in the elevator every day. Mm-hmm. If you're, say, you know, a 35-year-old with a young kid and probably moving to the suburbs was going to be in your future anyway, but now you have a chance to get a really inexpensive mortgage and you will get more space for the fact that you have to work from home. Your spouse probably has to work from home. Your kid may have remote learning. So people did want more space as a result of the pandemic. And then, you know, on top of that, there just isn't enough supply. So when there aren't enough homes being built anyway, that's going to push prices up. So you had all of these things kind of meeting together in this like perfect brew for housing prices to just take off.
Let me see if I have this straight. You have a smaller home supply than a decade ago. You have a bunch of millennials now coming in to the age of buying a home, and some of them are doing totally fine financially because their job is still around. They're able to work remotely. And then lower mortgage rates and more of a desire to get out of the city in the pandemic has home sales skyrocketing.
Right.
Okay, so you've reported that policymakers are seeing red flags in this situation, saying that we're potentially on the precipice of another crisis, which is interesting to me because it sounds kind of like the opposite of the problem you had in 08, right, where there was too much housing production. Why is this situation we're in now scary?
Sure. So it is kind of the opposite issue. 71% of the new mortgages that were made in the fourth quarter of last year went to borrowers with credit scores above 760, which is considered a really good number. And that's compared with 31% of those mortgages going to such creditworthy borrowers in the third quarter of 2003. So the loans are much better now. It is much more solid. There isn't the concern in that sense that everything's going to go bust. But there is a concern that the market will kind of outrun available buyers. You do have a situation where you have so many millennials reaching an age to buy a home. And if the market continues to grow at a pace that far, you know, right now I think it's growing at something like 3 times the rate of income growth.
Wow.
So you're going to have a situation where first-time buyers could be kind of choked off. And that matters for a lot of reasons. You know, for one thing, buying a home and owning a home is the way that most people build wealth in this country, sort of building up equity in your home. Mm-hmm. So you'll have a lot of people who might not be in the same kind of, they'll be less financially secure when the next crisis hits. Also, societally, there's a huge problem because the Black and Latino homeownership rates are already far below the white homeownership rate. If you have a situation where homeownership becomes only something that the wealthy can afford, that will widen that gap. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the millennial issue, this is already a generation that's far behind previous generations in terms of things like family formation. I think it's something like a third of the workforce is millennial, but millennials only have 6% of the wealth in the country. So this is already kind of a generation that's lagging behind previous generations in terms of starting a family, in terms of buying a home. You know, I think it's something like 1 in 5 young adults lives with their parents compared to 1 in 10, something like 15 years ago. So from what the data have indicated so far, being able to buy a home is linked with starting a family, et cetera. So given the fact that there are so many millennials reaching an age to buy a home, if you have the housing market kind of, you know, in this runaway position where most of them can't afford to buy a home, that's going to be a problem.
So comparing to 2008, again, we're not looking at a situation where it's all going to come crashing down, but sort of a slow burn type of crisis where more and more millennials, more and more Black and brown people in the U.S. could be priced out of being able to buy homes and build equity and potentially start families while richer people can.
Correct.
What's the fix here? What can be done to prevent this from escalating?
The number one thing is building more homes, and that's a problem as well. Home builders do expect there to be, I think, something like a little bit over a million home starts this year. That is picking up, but construction is expensive. Lumber prices have increased 180% since April, which adds about $24,000 to the cost of an average home. Just that change since April has added about $24,000. So, you know, there are a few things that lawmakers can do to kind of spur the construction of homes. Zoning is obviously an issue, but that's at a local level. In terms of federal policymakers, because of the last crisis, they're going to have to figure out a way to encourage homeownership without bringing undue risk into the market. But, you know, the biggest thing that anyone can do is increase the supply of homes.
Katie O'Donnell, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Also, today, the Biden administration is granting temporary protected status to Venezuelan exiles, fulfilling a campaign promise to allow them to live and work legally in the U.S. The TPS designation offers legal protections to Venezuelans fleeing the humanitarian crisis in their country and comes after years of Democrats and Florida Republicans pushing for the protections. The designation will be in place until September of 2022. Venezuelan nationals already in the U.S. must apply during a 180-day registration period and meet certain eligibility requirements to be shielded from deportation and receive work permits. And the Republican National Committee is denying a cease and desist demand from Donald Trump's attorneys. On Friday, the former president's legal team requested that the RNC stop using Trump's name and image in fundraising appeals. But yesterday, the RNC's chief legal counsel said the committee, quote, has every right to refer to public figures as it engages in core First Amendment protected political speech. The dust-up marks a rare break between the Trump team and the RNC, which worked together on joint fundraising in 2020, and comes as the former president seeks to punish some perceived Republican enemies in the 2022 midterm election. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts, and if you like what you're hearing and want to help us out, leave a rating and review. And tell a friend to check out the show. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.